G'day everyone, and welcome to the show. And today we've got Preston Dennett. How are you going, Preston?
I'm doing well.
Thanks for taking the time to come on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I've actually been following a bit of your work for a while, and you've been doing this research into not just UFOs, but all aspects of the paranormal and yetis and healings and that type of thing, which is, you know, it's fantastic to see that because it does cover a lot of things that, you know, you might have an experience, you might have a paranormal sighting or experience UFO sighting, but it's a complex jigsaw puzzle and everything entwines and interconnects. How did you get into UFOs and the weird and wonderful?
Well, I have to tell you, I was actually really skeptical of all this stuff and was ready to tell anyone who thought they saw a ghost or UFO that they were lying or misperceiving or on drugs. But I, in 1986, this was, you know, almost 30 years ago, I heard about a sighting over Alaska by a Japanese airliner. And I thought to myself, well, this pilot is lying. He's seeing a reflection off the ice cap. But I made the mistake of asking my friends, my family, my coworkers, what they thought of this ridiculous pilot. And I got a real shock, I have to tell you. I found out that my brother had seen a UFO. My sister-in-law, she had seen a UFO hovering over a local Air Force base with her two friends. She later had a face-to-face sighting with a gray-type ET. Mm-hmm. I had a couple of friends who had a missing time encounters with UFOs, and I brought it up at work, and several other people, you know, that I'd worked with for years were telling me these really dramatic UFO encounters. So it hit me like a ton of bricks. It wasn't good news. I kind of had to reevaluate everything and started reading all the books and found out, wow, you know, this is real. So it kind of snowballed from there.
Well, that's the hard thing, isn't it? Is that your paradigm shifted, and it's sort of like what you think you know, you don't really know, because you come across people like yourself who said you've had, you've talked to people who have had experiences, some legitimate people, and all of a sudden you're sort of like, well, there's something here. These people don't seem insane. There's something actually going on, and this is where I guess we have to be open-minded and sort of break down our preconceived notions. I know, being an experienced myself, that even now I'm still skeptical about a lot of things, but it's just because I haven't experienced it. Unless I've looked somebody in the eye or experienced myself, I don't throw it in the bin, but I keep it in the grey basket, so to speak. So it's just one of those things where, yeah, it's... No, I reckon people being skeptical is a good thing. I think debunkers, I don't have time for them, but people that are skeptical, they're looking at things logically. So they're letting the evidence weigh up themselves, which seems to be what you've done.
Right, right. Well, it actually made me more skeptical of everything because I had to, you know, reevaluate everything. Like, and I had to look at these people. I'm like, are they lying to me? Or did they really see what they said they saw? Because, you know, some of these people were saying they were taken on board these craft and things like this. So, yeah, it was quite a shock for sure.
Well, that's the next step. I know personally from talking publicly, being on the news and that about UFOs, to all of a sudden saying, you know, I've seen something more, that's where, you know, people will take it to the next level in terms of ridicule and whatnot. But everyone's sort of cool with weird lights in the sky, but you go a little bit further and some people don't want to go there. With your books and everything, how did things progress from where you started talking to people? Family, obviously, as you're saying, they were saying about their experiences and sightings and some of your friends. What pushed you to continue looking into it, and what pushed it to the next stage of writing books? And also now you've been on some shows, History Channel's done, and a lot of other shows and radio shows. What's pushed the drive for you behind this?
You know, I kind of wonder myself how I got so obsessed with this subject, because, you know, I haven't had any sightings in my own past, at least not until I started investigating this stuff, and I don't think I've been abducted or anything like that, but yes, it is within my family. It kind of hit home for me, and what I think really drove it over the edge was when a wave of sightings hit my hometown, which was Topanga Canyon in California.
Which you've wrote a book now about, haven't you?
Right, right. My sister, you know, this is when I kind of started really doing interviews. I'm recording them, and found out a lot of people were seeing this stuff, and was talking to multiple witnesses. For example, on that the Topanga Canyon wave of sightings, on one night, June 14th, 1992, was when there was a huge event. And to this day, I've interviewed probably close to 30 separate witnesses, you know, located from different locations throughout this canyon, who saw stuff on that night. So my sister-in-law was like, you know, there's enough information here for a book. You should get this information out. And that's kind of what started it all.
What's been some of the, like, the, obviously, like, with the amount of books you have done, I'm not sure, you've done over 10 books easily, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, 16, actually.
Yeah, well, over that, what's been, like, we'll go into some of them. I've got them actually up on the screen here. And I've been quite taken aback with the way you've gone about some of them and what you cover. It's fantastic, because I myself am a paranormal investigator, and I've taken reports of many different things, but you also cover, you know, just Bigfoot and healings and levitation and all different types of things.
Right.
What's been some of the, we'll keep with the UFO stuff at the moment and move to that stuff a little bit later on, but what's been some of the, you know, what's some cases that you could rattle off to someone that's unexplainable? Not, I'll say nearly all of them would be in terms of there's something very interesting, but what would be some main cases to someone you could put and go, well, how about this? How about this? Isn't this a weird story? What's some major highlights of our reports you've taken?
Well, you know, each case, it's hard to choose between them. I think part of the thing is as these cases start to pile up and you're predicting what people are going to say, it becomes more and more convincing. It's putting each piece together. But I think, you know, I have run into major cases. Probably one of the bigger cases I ran into was the Coronado Island incident, which I wrote an entire book about, because this involved multiple witnesses to one incident. Often you'll have cases which involve just one witness or maybe two. But no, this had like more than a dozen. And a lot of physical evidence, actually, medical evidence. And by that, I mean there was one witness who was apparently implanted by an object which was removed by Dr. Roger Lear, mm-hmm. who you know, was really into this, as I'm sure you know.
Recently passed, I think, didn't he?
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and other witnesses had all kinds of, you know, medical effects. There was a puncture wound. One witness had a MRI exams and was diagnosed with foreign bodies in his brain. You know, these objects, which were near his pituitary gland and things like this. So there is physical evidence for this stuff, and that case definitely was very impressive to me. But
with the MRI, is there, I know it would be theorizing, but is there, what's the theorization behind what these foreign objects around the brain would have done? Like, because different parts of the brain do different things. Is there anything sort of that anyone's had a theory about with what that would have done?
Yeah, I've actually looked quite a bit into this, and I think the main theory that people throw around is that it's some sort of mind control, which is kind of something I think it's easy to jump to. Yeah. And certainly there are cases where people have had strong impulses to go out to certain locations that they don't seem to be able to control themselves.
Yeah.
And I wonder about that. And also tracking is often brought up. But I have to tell you, I've talked to at least four or five witnesses and read in other cases where they asked what these implants were for, and the ETs told them, and you know, mind you, these are separate cases, mm-hmm. that the implants are used for not tracking, but rather measuring the level of pollution in a person's body, the contaminants, mm-hmm. or for boosting the immune system, or monitoring vital signs, and things like this. So I don't know. We're still kind of at the speculation stage. I do know of a couple of cases where people had implants removed and immediately were reabducted and re-implanted.
Yeah.
So they're
the
there.
With the implants you've looked at, I've come across others that have, you'd say they would be metal or they would appear metal, and then you look at the isotopic ratio and how it couldn't be constructed that way on Earth. It's very similar to a meteorite. Have some of the implants had that that sort of sign to them? They're very similar to what I've just spoken of, or have they, some of them been even organic? Because I've also come across that type of thing. Have you come across both, or what's been the main thing you've come across in terms of implants?
Yeah, I agree with you exactly. I think we do have some cases where they are organic. I'm not an expert on this particular subject, but I certainly have looked into it, and I know of, dozens upon dozens of these types of cases, which are very impressive evidence for sure, in that a lot of these implants are very, very similar. Some have actually emitted electromagnetic waves. There's a no foreign body response in the person's body when something, should be attacked and kind of pushed out, like shrapnel. These things aren't. They're not being recognized by the body as a foreign body. So there are a number of unusual things about them.
Well, that's a very important point to make, is that with most foreign objects, the body would encapsulate it and pus or push it out, or you'll get inflammation.
Exactly.
There's just things that just don't add up with this type of thing. And then you look at the object itself, some of them give off EMF readings and different radio frequencies, which actually some of them send radio frequencies out on not just a local level, but I guess interplanetary level, where it's going outside the planet.
Right. And I
So,
think it's
sorry,
important
go
also
on.
to note that there are witnesses who, they're taken on board and they see themselves getting implanted, and they can point to the place where the implant is. So it's not, this is something they're actually remembering, and it's matching with what, doctors are finding inside their arms.
Now, with the case you just spoke about, that you wrote a book about, you were saying which island was it that this event went down on?
This was the Coronado Island. This is just in Southern California, right at the coast of or the border of Mexico.
Would you mind just giving us a quick overview of the actual incident?
Yeah, it involved at least three or four different groups of people in one hotel, the Village Inn. This was in March of 1996, I believe, or 94, around that time. They were staying in three separate rooms, and on that evening, each of them reported ETs coming into their room, and one person from each room apparently was taken on board this craft. And it's an ongoing case. There's are still more witnesses coming forward at this time, but it's an amazing case because it involves so many independent witnesses whom I've spoken with, individually, and one witness, in fact, never had to go under hypnosis. She remembered the entire thing consciously. She saw these gray type beings come in and take her roommate up through the ceiling into this beam of light, leaving her paralyzed at the time. So it's a remarkable case.
Does she, when you talked to her, did she tell you what she thought the purpose behind this experience was?
Well, this is what's really unusual. The Coronado Island is kind of a resort town. This is also a pretty much a military town. This is where the Navy SEALs do their training. It's extremely full of law enforcement. And not only that, 2 days prior to this incident, or afterwards, President Clinton was coming to visit. So this entire island was literally covered with Secret Service agents, and is the least unlikely time and place, really, for a mass abduction. And yet it took place. And so there's the question of why. Perhaps this was sort of a display of power by the ETs saying, look, we can do this to anyone, anywhere, at any time. Or was there a connection at all to this, the fact that President Clinton was coming just 2 days later? It's hard to say, but,
Yeah,
you know,
opens up a can of worms with that, doesn't
it
it?
sure does. I can't think like an ET, but we're trying to figure out what they're doing. They do have agendas, I think, that we have got a hold of why they're here in general.
Yeah, multiple different types, multiple different agendas, and this is where it's it's an ever-learning thing from my perspective, because it's no matter how much of experience and others have, the ball just keeps rolling and you find something out and it opens up a billion more questions. So this is where it's like, how much do you want to know, and be careful, because with intent you can unravel a hell of a lot of things, which I think we've all experienced that have dabbled into this type of thing.
Right. In fact, that's what happened to me. I started asking people more open-ended questions. Not only did you see a UFO, but have you had anything else unusual? And this is when I got another real shock. A lot of these people who were claiming to be abducted had perhaps had a near-death experience, or out-of-body experience or precognition or experience with ghosts. And it just kind of, and it really threw me for a loop when there was Bigfoot reports coming to me. So I was dragged into this sort of stuff kicking and screaming. I did not want to look into it.
That's what happened to myself. But once I dabbled into it, I started looking at my life and then talking to other people where I went to go and investigate. And it's pretty much the same as what you're saying. You've all of a sudden the paranormal's bought into it, psychic abilities, all weird stuff and wonderful stuff is bought into it. How far down the track of investigating UFOs and that type of thing did the Bigfoot and the paranormal aspect, whether it's high strangeness or poltergeist type activity, how far down the track was this brought to your attention, that this was, there was something connected here?
Pretty early, I have to say. There was one gentleman, a radiologist, who wanted me to investigate his UFO incident. He had these red lights hovering outside his home in Canyon Country. And it described pretty much what I would say is a typical type of UFO sighting. There was no sound. These lights were moving strangely. They came down and apparently landed in his yard at one, right there at the corner. And he went to get his eyeglasses, but because he was nearsighted, and when he returned, they were taking off. Now, he says that the next night following this, a Bigfoot came right up to his house and was right there in the corner where this UFO was. And it was howling, and you could hear it, and his dogs were going crazy, and he was too terrified to go outside because this was clearly not a bear or dogs or anything like that. And in fact, he felt like he almost had a telepathic link to it. And it knew what he knew what it was thinking, and it knew what he was thinking, which is something I found out that turns up in a lot of Bigfoot cases. I found out much later. And then he says, following this incident, his house was haunted for like a month with all sorts of lights going on and off, poundings, doors opening and closing, and this type of thing. And he's like, well, what does this mean? And I'm like, oh, gosh, you know. And since then, you know, I've run into other cases like that where people have a haunting following a UFO sighting. So it's difficult to explain.
Yeah, it is. And I've put it down to sometimes it's something just vibrating out, interacting with us, the people who have had experiences. A lot of people, there's lots of videos up on the internet that I've put up of high strangeness in my presence, whether it's electrical equipment playing up or just orbs, weird stuff in the house. And it is something that seems to be common. Whether it's a gate open that anything will come through, if you're open to it and it's just attracted to you, who knows what the case is. I think we've all got some connection to something beyond the earthly realm. It's whether we're open to it or not. But it is common what you're saying for people after they've had an experience. With the Bigfoot side of things, I went back in and researched and looked at a lot of stuff that happened in the 1970s in America where there was a lot of correlation between Bigfoot sightings and UFO sightings at the same time, whether the Bigfoots were seen at the same time before or after. And then it sort of died down for a bit. Has your research had a lot of, not all, but has there been some cases, like you've just said, more of them in terms of there's been a sighting and then Bigfoot's been seen or vice versa?
No, I haven't had a whole lot of that. In fact, I, wrote quite a bit about Bigfoot and this so-called connection. And there are a good dozen or more cases, but it's very, very small. And as far as the connection, yes, it's there, but it's not with the majority of Bigfoot cases for sure.
Yeah.
They have no UFO at all. And the majority of UFO cases don't touch Bigfoot at all either.
Yeah.
So while there is a connection, it's very loose and hard to define.
Well, that's what I mean. Everything I sort of found was in the 1970s era, but that was it.
Yeah, and I think that there are some cases that are undeniably where there is a connection. There was a Pennsylvania case where Bigfoot were running all over this area at the same time as UFOs were out. So there's no doubt there is something going on. I think part of it might be, now this is just pure speculation. ETs are very telepathic. This is a rule pretty much when someone's taken on board a UFO. It's not spoken words. Everything is kind of telepathic, all communication. And this is true for Bigfoot as well. So I don't know if Bigfoot are able to sense these UFOs or vice versa. Maybe the UFOs are attracted to Bigfoot. But there is a connection there, and I can't quite figure it out.
Well, if you were to theorize about Bigfoot, what would you say is some key elements about where you think Bigfoot's from? Do you think they've been here a long time? Do you think they're just vibrating out? Very similar to the Skinwalker Ranch type thing where everything's popping in and out and they're just either living side by side or it's a portal type thing. What do you think the situation is with it? Because there's not just sightings of Bigfoot, same with UFOs and alien encounters and everything else, just in America, but it's prevalent throughout all cultures around the world.
Well, I have no doubt that Bigfoot is real. I think the evidence is extremely extensive. I mean, it's seen all over the United States and the world, for that matter, known by so many different names. I think that there probably is quite a bit of good evidence to believe that they are sort of paranormal. I've talked to one guy who had a Bigfoot sighting. It appeared in front of him, and he started telepathically communicating with it, and he said, yes, we have the ability to turn invisible. And then several more Bigfoot appeared, a female and two kids. The guy was totally sincere, and certainly not the only case like this where people have reported these Bigfoot disappearing, or for that matter, shape-shifting. So I don't know if there's like a para-ape and also another physical ape, because the evidence shows that they appear, you know, on ridgetops in very high altitudes. They appear in areas where there's a large food source, where it's very wet, always a water source. So they follow sort of natural laws. Yeah. And there's a lot of physical evidence in terms of, you know, Bigfoot nests and scat, and there's probably a good 30 or 40 cases of Bigfoot captures being reported. Which always seems to fade off into some maze of disinformation. So it's hard to say. I think there are Bigfoot bones out there somewhere, you know, in some private collector's basement. I'm still waiting for someone to prove Bigfoot in terms of a body.
Yeah, yeah. And this is where there have been people doing analysis on hair samples and this and that. Some have been quite... brought up, I think, some type of anomalies. I can't think of the people who've done the research off the top of my head at the moment, but there has been some weird things found, but until you're saying there's a body or there's something undeniably good in terms of evidence, you know, sort of just in the wind, I guess, and that's what it is with even with the UFO type thing, which these days there's that many fake videos put up where it's CGI and people believe it. And then it makes the rest of it, those who know it's CGI, just think that this is a whole load of crap. So there's a lot of disinformation or misinformation. And that's what pees me off as somebody that films a lot of crafts personally. And I've got over 100 witnesses to date and lots of videos. You know, I say to people, does it look anything like what I've got? And I haven't filmed everything out there, but I've got a few good mates that have filmed great stuff. And if it's not like what we've got, good chance of CGI because it's just... out there, and you've got groups like Third Phase of Moon, and a lot of people just putting one or two really good videos up in 100, and the rest of them are fake or CGI, and they're promoting it. Where we're trying to get to some truth here, and we're trying to sort out the crap from the real deal, and this is where it's hard. And I guess for researchers like yourself, a lot of what you've got to do is venting it and looking at people in the eye and getting a vibe about them, because unless you do that in person or you investigate thoroughly, you really don't know what you're promoting or putting your name to, do you?
Right, right. Well, seeing is believing. There was one lady who I interviewed very extensively who was having extraordinary encounters. She was being taken on board these craft. She was seeing these ETs in her home. She had multiple witnesses to support her. Her friends had seen UFOs, the neighbors. The newspapers reported a wave of sightings over the air neighborhood when she moved in, and I was conducting these very extensive interviews with her and finding myself kind of skeptical because her account was really extraordinary, and she agreed to show me a UFO. She was able to telepathically contact them, and we set up this date and went out to this location, which was in Pasadena, and pulled off the freeway there, hiked up this little hill, and We had no sooner reached the top of this hill where we were supposed to be when this object shows up. She grabs my arm and screams, and I'm going to say probably 50 feet away, maybe 100 feet off the ground, was this huge, beautiful gold sphere. And just obviously unexplained, it was too close to, you know, I'd misidentify. And it just hung there for a second, kind of said hello, and darted away pretty quick. And we were screaming, jumping up and down. She later showed me a Bigfoot. She took me out because the Bigfoot started haunting her neighborhood. So there's this connection again. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, all right, take me out. She again had witnesses. I interviewed her roommate who saw it, her son. It broke the tree branch outside the window. And she showed me some footprints. And then we went out to this area where she said it lived. And I tell you, no sooner had we opened the door of the car and gotten out, we had all this sound equipment and stuff, and when this thing roared really loudly, and I thought, oh my God, you know, what was that? I'm looking up in the sky to see if there's a jet, but no, there was nothing around, and it roared again, you know, really confirming that this was unusual, and I'm convinced I heard a Bigfoot. I really am.
I've had similar experiences. I know what you're saying, and you do think logically about this thing, and you're just like, but, you know, usually the first thing that comes to mind on these types of things is what the answer is and what you've experienced. What other things have you experienced when doing your research and doing this type of thing? Has there been other things happen, like the UFO sighting, the Bigfoot encounter, that you've had while investigating?
Yeah, walking through a haunted house and getting poked. That's happened a couple of times. Like getting poked in the armpit and you jump around, like, or your hair tugged. I think one of the most exciting in terms of ghosts was I'm sitting there talking about, you know, the haunting when we heard this huge crash in the kitchen. And honestly, I thought it was several metal pots, metal or glass plates and glasses, because you could hear the tinkling of the glass. You could hear little springs going, doing, doing, doing. I mean, this was a sound like I had never heard before. I go running into the kitchen and there's nothing there. There's just, I open all the, you know, the cabinets. I'm looking for something. You know, please explain this to me. There was nothing there. And so I've heard many witnesses describe how they've heard these weird, loud crashes in their living rooms or their kitchen. And so I got to hear it, and that was pretty exciting.
G'day, everyone. Now, you haven't popped into another dimension, but unfortunately, the last half an hour of the show did not record properly. There's the video, but there's no audio for some reason, which is the second time this has happened now, I think. So I'm going to get Preston back on the show again. Thanks, Preston, for being on the show. And where you're seeing this video or on my website, you'll find links to Preston Dennett's website. So cheers, everyone, for watching. Sorry about this, and can't help it. These things happen, and cheers.